welcome to Cult Picks Radio, WCPX 66.6 on your pod dial with me, your host, Django Nudo.
And the Smut Peddler.
And together, we are Cult Picks! Yay!
Yay, as we say.
Number one podcast for film and TV history
in Sweden.
Yes, see, the Bible says you will never become a prophet in your own village, but you can clearly become a film historian.
Yep. And that was good news.
It was good news. That's good news to start off with. And I think we were number 26 in film and TV podcast history, film and TV history podcasts in Canada, and 32nd in UK. But, you know, hey, we've only been going for a month.
Yeah, it's not bad.
The only way is up now.
Yep.
More good news on this program. We will have our first ever guest, and it's none other than the amazing Joe Ziemba from, what was the name of the company?
It's pronounced AGFA, we have now learned. It's spelled out as the American Genre Film Archive.
Yes, not to be confused with the film or tape manufacturers. So he'll be on a little bit later sharing his favorite films that are available on Cult Picks from AGFA, and we'll be playing clips from those films as well. So this was a great news. What have been some of the other good things this past week, Smut Peddler?
Well, we are getting to know new distributors and rights holders. We are negotiating for more rights. We have finalized a few more deals this week, which is amazing. One we can't talk about, but the other
not
one
yet.
Is not yet. But we are getting a lot of interest from distributors, and that's great. It proves that we are on the right track.
And it means more great films for our members as soon as, you know, we've concluded the deals and uploaded them. But we are going to share some of the new films on Cult Picks this week a bit later on. But obviously, the good news, we feel confident enough about the technology now to have been inviting more people to join. So we're working our way through the list.
Yeah, and it's a long list. So it's going to take a while, but we are letting in approximately 200 people at a time to sort of stress test the system.
Yep. And we'll definitely get through all of them. And I think we're about, was it beginning of June, we think we might open up to everybody?
To the general public, yes. And then we will have regular pricing. So anyone signing up for interest up till the end of May will still get the discount.
Exactly. We will definitely offer it to everybody who's registered interest. So that was good. The bad, if we can call it that. Well, we had a little hiccup with our friends from Stripe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, we are being audited all the time, but we are white as snow, so there's not a problem.
We are pure and white. Exactly. I don't know why we get this surprise audit all of a sudden, but was it the Nazis? Do you think?
I think they see money coming in from a new source, and they don't. They want to be sure that we're not selling babies.
That's true. Yes, and we're definitely not selling babies.
No,
but true. So for people who don't know, Stripe is a payment platform, pretty much the payment platform. If you want to accept credit card purchases, we don't do PayPal, unfortunately, and no Bitcoin. But yes, so Stripe handles all of our transactions. And I think what they saw is initially we had pretty much all the people come in from Sweden and Finland. And now suddenly we're getting members joining up from Malaysia, from Colombia. And it must look very weird to their algorithm who went beep, flag.
Yes, probably. So I don't think there was a major issue. It's just they wanted to know who we are. And now they know who we are because we are film historians.
And indeed, and we have the podcast to prove it, number one in Sweden. Let's say that again. So glad we have that cleared out. Hopefully we're not going to be looking at many more audits than that. But why don't we talk a little bit about the new films on the ad list this week?
Yeah, because we are adding, well, as some of our listeners already know, we are adding films thematically every week. It's about five or six films every week. Yep. But we also have a little random addition of different titles for different reasons. And I think we have a pretty cool bunch of titles this week. And I'm super happy and proud about those.
Yeah, just looking at them here under new releases. I mean, first of all, we always go for the best kind of poster. And if we don't find a poster, you know, we actually make the poster in a few cases, especially for short films and so on. But yeah, so shall we begin with a film that was long thought lost and was now being found?
Yeah, absolutely. Ondskans Världshus, or The Sleep of Death, is an English language film based on J. Sheridan Le Fanu, a short story, and it features some pretty interesting actors, pretty and
heavy
and
acting talent. Yeah,
and it has Kurt Jurgens, who was Stromberg in the Bond film The Spy Who Loved Me.
Yes.
It has Patrick McGee from A Clockwork Orange. He's the poor guy who's beaten up while his wife is being raped in Clockwork Orange.
Mm.
And then we have the Swedish cult actor Per Oscarsson, who's a big, big favorite of ours, and that we actually signed with a couple of titles directly with him, some films that he directed.
Really? Yeah. Oh, I didn't know that.
It's super cool. And this film, we've been looking for this for a very, very long time, and thought it was
lost. And I mean, when we say lost, it's that we couldn't locate a good print. We had a second, third generation copy from VHS, I think it was, a master.
Yeah, it was, you know, it couldn't be used, but
no.
Then our friends, the pirate DVD companies, come to our aid.
It's true. We find some of, you know, the best quality copies. We steal them back from the pirates.
Yeah, because we do own the rights.
Yes, and they didn't, so shame on them for putting it out on DVD, but thank you for at least, you know, enabling us to have a better quality copy. And look, it's still not high definition, but it's watchable standard definition.
Yeah, and we could also add that if we have standard definition films, we will always be looking for better prints and better masters, so we are always sort of upgrading our content.
Definitely, yes. I think, I mean, roughly by my estimate, and a lot of it with the help of our friend Simone.
Simone!
Ciao, Simone.
Ciao, Simone.
I think we've upgraded about a third of the films on Cult Picks to slightly better. I mean, sometimes maybe we're the only ones who notice it and a handful of golden eyes, but other times it is going from standard def to proper high def.
Yes, it's very noticeable.
And The Sleep of Death is also remarkable because it is directed by Calvin Floyd. And we do have quite a few Calvin Floyd films, and we have more coming, don't we, in better quality.
Yes, we will have the complete Calvin Floyd library. And he's, I would say, rather forgotten Swedish-American director. And it's going to be great to present them all. Some of them also newly restored by the Swedish Film Institute. So that's going to be great.
And hopefully we'll have his daughter on this show as well to talk a little bit about her dad.
Yes, she's promised to be with us when we have all the films up and running.
Probably in the autumn sometime.
Yeah.
So next up, Girls in Chains. The title alone, terrific. A little known, I would say, other than connoisseurs of women in prison films. This is by Edgar Ulmer from 1943, and maybe fair to say it's not one of his most famous films.
No, but I think it must be one of the very earliest women in prison films.
Definitely, definitely. I mean, it is. I don't think you can pinpoint the start of the genre like you could with Nazi exploitation and Love Camp 7, but this is definitely one of the early ones. Next up, a great, I think, again, often overlooked horror film from the 70s, which is The Horrible House on the Hill, also known as
Devil Times 5.
Also known as
People Toys.
Yes. As we say in Swedish, Dear Child has many names.
Yes, indeed. And this is a remarkable film about a bunch of psychotic children who they are in a car crash, and no one really knows who they are when they come to this village in winter.
Yeah.
So things turn ugly really fast. And
it's enough to put you off having children, I'd say.
Mm.
I mean, this isn't just one little Damien doing nasty things. This is five of them. and they do it in some detail as well. No spoilers, but yeah.
No, but it has some, there's actually a quality to it in one specific scene that reminds me a lot of Thriller, A Cruel Picture, or They Call Her One Eye, which yes. is in ultra slow-mo.
Slow-mo, yeah. It's funny, it's also one of the films that we've put out that's had the most responses on social media. So when I added, there's a great picture of a kid with an axe in the snow on Instagram. And yeah, it provoked people saying how much they loved this film. And I think many had forgotten that it existed and how much they enjoyed it.
Why don't we listen to a clip from The Horrible House on the Hill?
Yes, well, hopefully that'll entice you to watch the film. Even scary when you watch it than when you hear it. So, next up, The Klansman. Obviously, it wasn't enough to have Nazis on. Now we've got white supremacists, smut peddler. What's it all about?
This film is, the storyline is kind of a classic about the Ku Klux Klan wanting to lynch a black man who's innocently accused of raping a white woman. Mm-hmm. So, obviously, he's in big trouble. But this film was in even more big trouble. The whole production story of it is a total train wreck. It was supposed to be directed by Sam Fuller, real classic Hollywood director. And obviously he walked off the set in a rage and was replaced by Terrence Young, who's famous for what?
He is the director of the first few Bond films.
Yes, indeed. He made a bunch of them. So he directed the film. And then it's also, you know, what they say, never check a good story.
Nope.
Supposedly, the stars, Richard Burton and Lee Marvin, were so drunk out of their minds during the shoot that they still, many years afterwards, didn't remember that they actually had made this film.
Huh. And it also features that famous actor, O.J. Simpson.
Indeed.
I'm guessing not playing a Klansman, unless he's undercover.
I think he's the guy who's been chased in the swamp.
Or the one they want to lynch. Mm. Some people want to watch it just for that.
I guess so, yeah. Is he still serving time?
I think so, but yeah. Something new. Was it for breaking and enter or something? Anyway, enough about O.J. Simpson. There's something you don't know about me mm-hmm. with regards to Terrence Young.
Okay.
Smart peddler, let me tell you. Let's make this about me. I have not only met Terrence Young's daughter, who's lovely, lovely, but I have held the seashell that Ursula Andress emerged from the ocean with in Dr. No when she first met Sean Connery.
That's big.
Yeah. It was in her bathroom and she showed it to me. This is at a party. And she said, "This is my daughter's college money."
Wow. Yeah, that's an insurance for your old age.
It is indeed. So wow, that was a long time ago. So I'm sure the daughter has cashed it in and gone to college, I hope. Yeah. But yeah.
And then to finalize this week's of random upgrades or uploads for Cult Picks, we have a strange little Belgian-French film, which originally was called L'Étreinte, which I think means The Embrace.
Yes.
In the US, it was called Impulsion. Mm. And it has an all other alternative title, as they do, called Giselle, which is the lead character. And I found a wonderful review of it. And I took parts of that review and made it into the presentation of the film. So I'll just read it to you because I really like this. Decadent, colorful, Radley Metzgerish time capsule.
What?
about young Giselle, who becomes rich boy Michel's servant and sex slave.
Yes.
And this film is so obviously inspired by the novel The Story of O. That the novel actually is featured in the film. They read it. But this was many, many years before the more famous film version of The Story of O came about.
There was a film version, yes.
Oh, yeah.
That's right. Oh, so this is basically a Belgian pirate knockoff of The Story of O, but sounding quite good.
Yes, but also made way before the more famous version. So sounds cool. And this is the first of a number of Belgian films we will have. And we are very, very excited about that. And we must say thank you to our friend Simone for being the broker for this.
And before we sign off and get on to this week's theme film, a quick shout out to Maniac as well, which I think was posted about a week ago, which is a pre-code, meaning it's before 1935, exploitation film, which features sex, drugs, psychos. And it really is a gem of a little obscure, weird, culty film. Women in underwear sitting around chatting for no good reason, and man going slightly bonkers. Impersonating a dead doctor. So do check it out as well, Maniac.
Yeah, and I mean, it was directed by Dwayne Esper, who was a super, you know, super famous B-movie director. So he was also involved in Sex Madness, for instance, that we have talked
and
about.
And Weed.
Yeah.
Roots in Hell, also on Cult Picks.
So he was involved in a lot of warning films.
Yep. Of course, that's what he wanted to do. Anyway, and that wraps up a very nice eclectic mix of new films on Cult Picks this week. Why don't we play a little clip from this week's theme films?
A family was taking a trip on a holiday weekend when suddenly two total strangers decided their destiny. One stranger was a very competent driver who pushed his truck over this stretch countless times in the past. It was foggy that morning, and he was behind time. The other stranger was death. He visited both vehicles. The first victim was the driver who had violated a basic principle, driving too fast for conditions. The other victims were the parents. No, this is not a dream, not a nightmare. This is real, and it's true. Their parents are with them no longer. The children were the sole survivors of this mechanized death.
So, if we weren't pushing the envelope far enough last week with Nazi exploitation and documentaries of Nazis and ill deeds of Nazis, this week we feature actual dead bodies in films. So, what exactly is it that we're showing this week?
This is road safety horror, which you aptly called Carnage. I love it. Yeah, there were, I mean, not only in Sweden, but in a lot of countries, there were these short films that were supposed to warn people about the hazards of driving carelessly.
Yeah, because people are dying in phenomenal numbers in the 60s. I mean, they were getting rich, they were affording cars, but back then, you know, apart from Volvo, they didn't have seat belts. Airbags, or I mean, they were rolling death traps.
They were basically in tin cans.
Yeah, effectively. So various efforts were made to make cars safer and to make drivers safer, and frightening the bejesus out of them was obviously one of them. And a good friend of mine who went to high school, and they showed her these films, and she's made of sturdy stuff, I can tell you. She's traumatized pretty much to this day by what she saw in these things. I mean, they didn't spare you any details because it was just actual graphic footage filmed by highway patrolmen of mangled car wrecks and bodies, live or dead, being pulled from them.
And I mean, even in Sweden, we had the a couple of doctors / directors who made both the feature film Susanne, which is, you know, it's an interesting film because that's not just about driving. It's, you're not supposed to drive cars, you're not supposed to drink alcohol, you're not supposed to have sex.
Bad.
But them being doctors, they were able to get their hands on actual footage from operations.
Yep.
So there's some pretty graphic stuff, especially in the short film Blind Man's Buff, where there's a very long
hammer
sequence of a man with a hammer and chisel going banging away at a kneecap.
I'll be honest, I can't watch that. I saw the still from it, and that's enough for me. Mm.
In color.
In color, yes, just to make it worse.
Mm.
For the very, very, hard stomach gore hounds, but, with those kind of topics, I think there are two ways we can go next week. Either we go for actual autopsies, which I don't want to do, or we have to find a much nicer topic.
Or we go for musicals.
Yeah, musicals. There you go.
But you found a little oddity here. That's about road safety.
No, and again, I have to give credit to the one and only Simone.
Simone.
Because he was the one who introduced me to Shake Hands with Danger, which is a kind of a road... It's a safety film about things on the road, but it's about caterpillars. Not the actual insect, but about caterpillar heavy-duty equipment. So, big pieces of machinery like cranes and
scoopers. Bulldozers.
Bulldozers, exactly. And they hired a horror director, whose film we also have, Carnival of Souls, on Cult Picks, to direct this, to show you just how things could go wrong. You could die or lose limbs in horrible, horrible ways if you didn't pay attention to safety.
Yeah, it's quite surprising that Herc Harvey made this film.
But he did a lot of short films, and in fact, I read somewhere that people asked him why hadn't he done a feature film, and then he did a feature film just so he would be able to say that at the next dinner party, and that's how he made Carnival of Souls pretty quickly and well. But yeah,
a classic.
Shorts were his favorites. So, and do go and watch it. It's fake gore, unlike all the other road safety films. So you'll be quite safe. Repeat to yourself, it's not real blood.
No. And then we heard, again, all of these things coming to us when we start talking about it, that the classic Danish director Carl Theodor Dreyer made a road safety film as well.
Yeah. I mean, I was amazed by that. And apparently, I haven't finished watching it, but apparently inspired by his legendary Vampire as well. So, I mean, who out there hasn't done a road safety film? Did Bergman do a road safety film that
we don't know
about?
No, but he did do soap commercials.
He did. I know about the soap commercials, But I'm thinking is there must be, same as some directors, you heard that they started off doing actual porn films before they went legit, Was road safety film kind of the other ones?
Could be,
Robert Altman did the one about James Dean dying in a horrible car crash.
Right.
Maybe counts. Anyway, before we go over to our guest, why don't we play and listen to the title track from Shake Hands with Danger.
You mean you'll work on engines and machinery and not think of your own personal safety? Here, Shake Hands with Danger.
Shake Hands with Danger. Need a guy who ought to know. I used to laugh at safety. Now they call me Three Finger Joe. Shake Hands with Danger. Find it anywhere you choose. Be careless for a moment. Spend a lifetime with the blues.
We are super excited to have our first ever guest here on Cult Picks Radio. So without further ado, let me welcome Joe Ziemba from AGFA. And I hope I pronounced both of those correctly. Joe, great to have you on Cult Picks Radio. Thank you for coming on.
Oh, thank you so much. And you pronounced both perfectly, so I won't be leaving this conversation right now because you did a good
job. That's
the
first hurdle cleared.
But no,
always
thank
you so much. A good one when you've got a star on the show. And it is, I mean, there's no false modesty allowed. This is a star because AGFA is truly, one of the great companies in this field that we're in of bringing back, some of the greatest film titles, the ones the critics would rather you forget, and finding new audience for them. So rather than me, waffling on about you, why don't you tell us a little bit about your background and the background to AGFA?
Well, thank you for those kind words, and thank you so much for having me here today. And we're so happy to be a part of what you're doing, and what you're doing is very, very important. And as I was, you know, talking before, when the announcement of Cult Picks went out, the first thing I saw on the homepage of Variety was a poster for Alice in Acidland. So I knew that you guys were doing, you know, the right work and doing the good things here. So thank you. But yeah, so AGFA started in 2009, and it's a nonprofit. We're based in Austin, Texas, and we're currently the world's largest distributor, home video and theatrical distributor of genre films in the world. And we started out as simply as a print archive with a focus on genre films and obscure, you know, genre films on 35mm. And that grew to the point where Sebastian Del Castillo, who was kind of overseeing the archive for many years, he and I started working together while I was at the Alamo Draft House, which was a sister company of AGFA. And we kind of put our heads together and thought, you know, what can we do with AGFA to take it further? We've got all these prints. What can we do? And we thought, well, what would happen if we got the rights and we got a scanner and we started preserving and restoring these films and making them available. So we did a Kickstarter back in 2016 in partnership with Something Weird Video, who's also a partner of Cult Picks. And from there, we got the Kickstarter success. We got the scanner, and it kind of went from there. And after that, we started to focus more on theatrical distribution as well, because we were already in the business of theatrical distribution with our prints. So we thought, you know, we should reach out to our friends at home video labels that have rights to these things and see if they're interested in having us do theatrical for them. And so we reached out to Vinegar Syndrome, Arrow Films, Severin, Shout Factory. It just kept going from there until we now have the world's largest DCP collection. It's available for bookings, well over 1,000 DCPs at this point.
And that's one of the things I love about AGFA, is that you're not just, you know, churning out any old title that you can find on DVD, you know, stacking up the bins. It's, you are actually a theatrical company as well. You make sure that these films don't just go into people's collections, but that people have the ability, wherever possible, to see them on the big screen in partnership with great cinema chains like Alamo.
Yeah. I mean, we're very grateful to be able to do. I mean, we think back about it a lot as a team, and how did this happen? And it was just, you know, our own personal passions of what we wanted to do. Like, oh, we love that movie. Who has it? Who has theatrical on it? Let's work with them to make it work. So everything we do is highly curated, and we don't take titles unless it's something that we're like, oh yeah, like this is something we're interested in. So thanks.
What was your own background, you know, before all of this? Did you come to it via kind of theatrical or film societies? Tell us a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I actually had no formal background whatsoever in film. I went to school for graphic design, and that's what I have my BFA in design. And I still use that today at AGFA. I do all the design work. I'm the creative director at AGFA, so that's what I do at AGFA. But I basically came to it through Bleeding Skull, which is a site I started in 2004, which was basically launched to celebrate under-the-radar horror films, mostly shot in video films that I felt were not getting the respect and celebration that they deserved. So I started that site, and it was just a hobby. It kind of grew into a book. And then Zach Carlson, who's working for the Alamo at the time, was a fan of the site, and we connected through Bleeding Skull. And he one day called me out of the blue and asked me if I'd be interested in working at Alamo and doing a programming job. And I was living in LA at the time, and I had no job. I was unemployed. And I, you know, did the smart thing and said, no, I'm hanging out in LA. Like, I don't have any money. Like, I might as well keep doing this. We'll see what happens. So a year later, he called me back and asked again if I'd be interested. And at that point, I was like, well, I better kind of check this out and see what it's all about. So I traveled to Austin, and I met the Alamo team, and I really loved it. It was just I didn't know anything. I didn't even know what a film print was. I didn't know anything about films other than I was a giant fan. That was like one of the huge passions of my life, was movies. And so once I got to Alamo, I quickly learned, you know, about everything in the business. And, you know, I've been at AGFA for almost 4 years full time now. So I was at Alamo for a while, and I was the art director and programmer at Alamo. And then I switched over to AGFA full time. And in that time, I mean, I've completely built my professional career now in the last 8 years, and out of nothing. So I feel very, very fortunate after having a lifetime of jobs that I absolutely hated and didn't, you know, had no personal involvement in whatsoever. Now being here and finding this has been...
You found your true calling, definitely. Yeah. And I want to get Smut Peddler as well involved in this. And but otherwise, we lose track of the fact that you've got so many great films, and we wanted to bring you on here to get your recommendation for some of the films from the Agfa collection. So as we talk, I'm going to ask you to pick one of the films, and maybe we can play a clip from it, and then we go back to talking about these things. So what's one of the early films that stood out for you from the Agfa collection, or had a kind of special meaning for you as you began your career?
Yeah, thank you for asking about this. I'm excited. I actually want to talk about some of the more under the radar films that don't get a lot of love and people kind of overlook. And I'm so happy that you were interested in those films. Like, you guys took, you know, Bat Pussy and Robot Love Slaves and movies that, my gosh, like, you know, no humans in their right mind usually want to watch. So that's great that you have them. The first movie I would like to talk about is Another Son of Sam, which was actually the B-side of our first Blu-ray release, which was The Zodiac Killer. And those two movies kind of go together really well because they're both true crime, like faux true crime, you know, epics trying to tell the story of these killers. But Another Son of Sam to me was really interesting because the Zodiac Killer film itself was, you know, Tom Hansen, the director, was actually trying to catch the Zodiac Killer by making the movie. Like, that was what he was trying to do. But Another Son of Sam, you think, oh, it must be something similar. But Another Son of Sam is even further out of the outer reaches of madness because the filmmakers had originally made a movie about kind of an assassin running wild on a college campus. And then when Son of Sam became, you know, all the rage in the newspapers, they decided, oh, we have this movie that didn't do any business, you know, a couple of years ago. Let's retitle it Another Son of Sam and, you know, tie into that. And they did that. And, you know, this movie has nothing to do with Son of Sam, let alone Another Son of Sam. But it's this very other dimensional story of this, you know, killer on a campus. It's got slasher elements. It's got really interesting synth soundtrack. But it's also, it was shot in Florida. So, you know, anytime you have a movie shot in Florida, movies shot in Florida go by a different beat than anything else in the world, because I don't know if it's the sun baking down on what's going down there. But I don't know what it is, but movies from Florida always feel out there.
It's why they have Florida Man, you know, made for headlines, made for weirdness.
Yeah, totally. So, you know, the movie itself, there's a lot of strange decisions in Another Son of Sam. There's a lot of inexplicable slow motion at times when you wouldn't expect it. Like, you know, there'd be a couple of detectives walking from their car to their office and it'll be in slow motion, you know, and it's like, why? Like, why is that? What is the significance of that? So there's a lot of very strange decisions like that. And it also delivers as kind of a weird proto slasher, too. And then the highlight of it is there's a lounge singer named Johnny Charo who is in the movie for no reason that I can tell, just to showcase his songs that he sings. And you get to see full songs in a nightclub by Johnny Charo. So it's a really nice slice of life from Florida during that time that also functions as a very out there slasher. So I really love that movie, and I wish more people would check it out.
And it's great. I love the concept of it as a B-side or, as, you know, a double bill feature. Again, people forget or don't think of films that way anymore, you know, the way they used to, you know, just about it in our time. And as you alluded to, this whole incredible story behind the Zodiac film, the fact that they were trying to catch the killer and they were sitting and comparing handwriting samples at the premiere as well of people who were, you know, putting in suggestions into a ballot box. So that's weird, but thank you. Excellent recommendation. Definitely pointing people towards that.
Tina? Are you awake?
I wanted to bring on board the Smut Peddler now and hear from him of just his, how did you come into contact with Agfa, and what was your first kind of interaction?
Yeah, well, Joe and me, we met back in 2017 when me as the unofficial I don't know, manager for Christina Lindbergh, accompanied Christina to the Alamo Drafthouse for an evening of Thriller, A Cruel Picture, or they call her One Eye. And it was great. And Joe, you took me for a tour in the AGFA offices as well.
Oh, yeah. That was our original office. It was kind of like a closet at the Alamo South Lamar. Mm. So we've actually since moved into an official office since then.
Wow, that's
yeah, you saw the beginnings of it.
Yeah, but that was cool. And also, you have been curating a lot of these thematic nights at the Alamo Draft House, haven't you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Were they like Terror Tuesdays or any of the other days? Or
yeah. So I was programmer and host of Terror Tuesday from the end of 2013 through, you know, when the pandemic started in 2020. And so, yeah, I did a whole lot of programming at the Alamo during those years. Yeah, Terror Tuesday, Video Vortex, lots of one-off
yeah, and
shows.
Video Vortex, was that the made-for-video films that you were screening on the big screen?
Yeah, totally. It was movies that were originally sourced on video, whether it be, you know, bootlegs or shot on video horror movies or anything we could find that fit into that category.
Didn't also Alamo open a VHS rental store as well? At some point,
yeah.
I remember reading something about that.
Yeah, that was they took the name of the Video Vortex series and called the store that. So it's Video Vortex the store as well, and there's a couple of those throughout the U.S.
But it's so funny to think of direct-to-video films on the big screen. You must be able to count the pixels basically on the screen.
Yeah, you know, it's I love it. It's a very surreal experience seeing VHS blown up to, you know, a two-story screen in front of your face.
Wow.
It's very cool.
That's awesome. Yeah, so me and Christina had a great time, and you were great hosts. It's a memory for life, really. And of course, Austin, Texas is a pretty, pretty cool town.
Mm. Yeah, as a memory for life for me too. Thank you. So, I mean, that was one of, Annie, my partner Annie, and I still talk about that show. Is like, that was one of the best experiences we've ever had with programming. It was so much fun.
That's a good segue for the next film pick. And is there anything on the list that can relate to the theme of Christina or nudie or slightly adult and risque that you'd like to flag up?
Yeah. I mean, I would have to, in that category, go with Bat Pussy.
I was hoping you'd say that.
Yeah. Oh, Bat Pussy. There's so much. We could talk like 3 hours about Bat Pussy, honestly.
We could do a podcast just about that one.
Yeah. So Bat Pussy, I was first introduced to Bat Pussy by Lars Nilsson, who was a programmer at Alamo, now is head programmer at AFS, the Austin Film Society in Austin. And when I first moved to Austin, Lars is one of the... he can talk about movies like no other in the world. He's incredibly intelligent, very funny. He's just a gem of a human being, a very, very great person. And when I first moved to Austin, we were talking about movies and something weird in general. And he asked if I'd ever seen Bat Pussy. And I said, no, what's that? And he just kind of went, yeah, you got to go rent that movie and see it. And so that weekend I went to I Love Video here in Austin and rented the original Something Weird VHS of Bat Pussy and was just completely blown away. It's an understatement to say I've never seen anything like that. There's really no other movie like Bat Pussy. And nope. So, after we had done the Zodiac Killer with Something Weird, Lisa Petrucci, who's our partner on the Something Weird releases, who runs Something Weird, asked, what do you guys want to do next? And you have this huge library of movies that we've worked out to work on. And we said, actually, we would like to do Bat Pussy. And she said, okay, all right. Like, let's try it. Okay, let's do it. This is crazy, but let's do it. But we knew that movie was so... You know, once you see it, you never forget it, and you have to tell someone about it.
Cannot be unseen.
Yeah, and it's
burned
like
burned into the retina of your eyes.
Yeah, I mean, burned into it. You got to tell people about it. You want to rewatch it. It's just there's such a mystery about it. Like, why was this made? What is it here for? And for people who haven't seen it, this is basically it's a halfway between softcore and hardcore porno about a very unhappily married couple in a bedroom that is a set arguing for about 50 minutes. And then all of a sudden there's Bat Pussy, who is kind of a takeoff on the old Batman TV show. And she's a woman wearing a, you know, very threadbare Batman costume. And she rides around on a bouncy ball the way she stops crimes. And if she hears about a fuck film being shot in Gotham City, then she goes to it and stops it unless she is also a part of it. So that's the whole plot of the movie.
God bless the American Constitution and freedom of speech and the amendment that allows, you know, parodies and films like this to be made. Otherwise, Warner Brothers would be all over this, like, you know, fur on a bear.
Yeah, yeah. So we did a full-blown special edition Blu-ray release of Bat Pussy with a commentary and extras. And yeah, that was our second Something Weird release. And yeah, I think it's required viewing for anyone that's diving into the void of Something Weird. You know, there's thousands and thousands of those movies, and Bat Pussy is definitely in the top 10 of movies you have to see.
Meanwhile, at Bat Pussy's secret warehouse hideout, Dora Dildo, alias the mighty Bat Pussy, is patiently waiting for her super senses to tell her that a crime is about to be committed. She can always tell when her twat begins to twitch.
God damn. I feel like a crime is about to be committed. My secret twat tells me somebody's about to shoot a fuck movie in my holy Gotham City. I think this is a job for Bat Pussy. Out of my night gannet, into my Bat Pussy uniform.
And I think that there was a kind of a controversial screening of Bat Pussy at the film festival in Austin, wasn't it?
Oh yeah, that was the infamous 2017 Fantastic Fest. Both of our screenings were we had done Bat Pussy and then also Ed Wood's Take It Out and Trade, which was at that point a completely lost film. And you know, Bat Pussy was it was what it was. You know, it was pretty upfront about what it was, and I think that any controversy surrounding it was probably because of the climate at the time. You know, going on. Take It Out and Trade, the mistake that we made was we made it a mystery screening, and so that people weren't aware of what they were seeing. So that was, you know, lesson learned on that one. You know, the movie itself is nothing more than an R rating, you know, in that movie. There's nothing in it. It's like a basically like a nudie cutie. But, you know, at the time, it, you know, it affected people in that way, and we learned from it.
But also, wasn't it a lot of criticism came from people who didn't even watch the films?
Correct. Yeah, it was mostly online. So it's always a difficult thing to navigate when that happens.
Yeah, as always. Yeah. But we were talking earlier with Smut Peddler and I and saying that we have to put together a theme week or at least a double bill of films with women on space hoppers, because we've got Bat Pussy and we've got Sweden Heaven and Hell, which starts off with about 20 women sort of in leotards
really?
Or bouncing around on space hoppers in slow motion.
Wow.
So, you know, we've got two films. It's the genesis of something. We need to go out and look for more because they got to be out there.
They have to be.
You know what? We have one more. We have a short film in this compilation of Eugen Wörman's The Wild World of Eugen Wörman, with a nude woman sitting, bouncing on a ball, eating a banana, and the end.
We've got a film festival right there. I love it. So moving on, though, obviously things have changed a lot during COVID, and it's been a very tough time, especially for cinemas, having been shut for months at an end. And I know that Alamo has suffered particularly. And now just sort of starting to reemerge. But how has that impacted you, and what does that mean for you moving forward?
Yeah, I mean, thank you for asking that. I think a lot of people were curious about AGFA, you know, like what we did, because, you know, at the time, our bread and butter was theatrical. That was how AGFA, that's how all the revenue to AGFA, that's what kept the lights on. And so literally within 2 days, there were no more theatrical bookings and everything was canceled. So we had to pivot very quickly and ask, what do we do? What the goal of AGFA was simply, how do we survive? Like, how do we get through this and what do we do? So, you know, our team, it's really owed to our entire team as to how we got through it. We have a very, very great team. And I think that I could talk about our team a long time about how much I love working with them and how great they are. And I think we all really came together and decided to focus on, okay, like what do we have that we can survive? How do we survive? Like, what can we do this? And so we focused on broadcast licensing, on freelance lab work with our scanner, and home video. We really increased the home video releases. We were doing about, I don't know, 4 to 7 a year, and then we're doing up to almost 14 this year. And then last year we went up to 11. So we really just went full force on that. And it worked. We finally started breaking even back in November and December. So right now we're primed for theaters reopening. It's starting to happen a little bit. We're starting to get bookings again. And we're very excited about that because we love the theatrical experience. You know, that's one of the reasons why the mission exists for AGFA. So the fact that theaters are finally coming back makes us really happy.
Well, I want to get onto that as well, but this seems like a good time for another film and another clip. So do you want to tell us what the next film is that we're going to hear from a bit from?
Yeah, I'd actually like to go back to the idea of the movies that we once played at Video Vortex, the series.
Yeah.
Because we do have a couple of those. You know, through AGFA and Bleeding Skull, we release movies that are specifically, you know, either shot on video or edited on tape. And one of the ones that I would like to focus on is The Soul Tangler, which, again, thank you both for, you know, licensing movies like that. You have Bloodlake and The Soul Tangler. But I want to focus on The Soul Tangler because I think it kind of it doesn't get as much recognition as some of the others. And I think it's a really unique kind of movie. And the way we've always kind of sold The Soul Tangler was that it is, it's basically Reanimator on Long Island made for the price of a used car. And that's really an apt description of the way it feels. It's kind of like a 1980s mad scientist movie that just kind of ramps up and ramps up. And in the last 20 minutes is just explosion of gore, like street trash level gore, which is really cool.
Let's hear a clip from that. And then we'll come back to what makes this the Long Island, you know, budget of a used car Reanimator.
No!
Interesting to see what happens this time.
Hold it! Cops are on their way. I knew something was up when Sandra wasn't back at the car.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
No! I'll be back. Look around. Look around. You see anything moving? Oh, my
something
God.
Moving?
Look.
What am I looking
see
for?
See anything moving? You don't understand, Zach. He's left his body. He's going to reanimate a dead body.
Ignoramuses cannot begin to comprehend my powers.
That was a clip from Soul Tangler. So how did you first come across this film, or what was the kind of the background of how it came to be a kind of an AGFA title?
Yeah, so this movie was never properly released in the U.S. It had a, I believe, a Korean VHS release, and there may have been a UK release at some point. But the filmmaker, Pat Bichow, had made the movie entirely on his own. He shot it on 16mm, edited it on tape. And, you know, there was a pocket in the 80s and 90s of so many independent horror movies getting made that just never got distribution in the U.S. It's like the well is almost endless. So The Soul Tangler came about because back in 2014, I believe, Bleeding Skull and Mondo entered a partnership to start reissuing some of these movies on exclusive, like, limited edition VHS releases through the Mondo site. And we had a pretty good run. I think we did about 6 or 7 releases, but Soul Tangler was one of the early ones, and that's how we met director Pat Bichow. We just kind of reached out to him and asked if he'd be interested, and he ended up, he was a lot like Ricard and Christina, just like such a great, great guy, such a great person to work with, and just happy and excited to, you know, be working on the Soul Tangler. And so that's how we met him, and then we decided when AGFA started that the Soul Tangler deserved more than just a limited edition VHS release, so we did a full-blown DVD special edition. And yeah, it's a really special little movie. And the DVD includes the original, like, original producer's cut, which is very long, and then a new director's cut, which is Pat Bichow's original vision, which is like 65 minutes and is awesome. It's like, yes, yeah, like that's the Soul Tangler version.
And we always tell our Cult Fix members that if you love a film, you know, the streaming service isn't the be end and all. Go out and buy it on DVD. If you can, go and see it in the screening, because that's the best way to enjoy it with like-minded people. And I must imagine that for you, having worked with all these or gotten in touch with all these directors and talent of these films that were neglected and forgotten, to bring them back to life and for them to occasionally come and meet audiences, getting to watch it again, the big screen, that must be quite something, I would imagine.
Yeah, that's actually, it's something that we don't get to talk about very much because it's just not something that you would think about. But the very special thing about doing this with directors and filmmakers who maybe, you know, maybe their release was a small release, maybe it never got released, is that when they're able to understand that there is an audience out there that will appreciate the movie for the right reasons. Like, we're not here to make fun of the movie. We're not here to riff on it. We are here to appreciate and celebrate this vision that you had. It can sometimes change their lives, you know, and it's really special to see that. And it's an unexpected perk of doing this work, because you get to see the filmmakers smile and they're happy that their film is out there. And it's, you know, sometimes we still, even the early releases, we'll get emails from Pat or, you know, the guys from effects, and they'll just say, you know, thank you so much for, you know, allowing this to happen. It's for working with us. We can't believe that people are still watching it. And that's the best feeling. It makes your whole week when you get a message like that. So, yeah, it's pretty nice.
I want to turn the light on Smut Peddler and ask him for a choice of a film from the many great and wonderful AGFA films on the list here. So if you had to pick one out, which one would that be?
I mean, there's so much in there. And
it's
I'm
like a Sophie's choice now. Only one.
Still, I know. There's so much I haven't seen. And you know, I'm super happy, of course, of the Ed Wood films. But I would say that the one that I've seen clips from, and it, that also sticks out as it's a non-US film, is The Sword and the Claw, which is a film from Turkey. And I don't know if, Joe, do you have any more like background on the film? Obviously, it stars the big action star of Turkey, Cüneyt Arkin, who was in a lot of movies. Like, I think he's in the Turkish Star Wars as well, isn't he?
He is, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I love, before you go on, I love the fact that we are able to have, thanks to you guys, you know, a Turkish films on Cult Picks. And I wish, I mean, there are so many of the ones I've read about or seen clips of, like the Turkish Star Trek or the Egyptian Rocky Horror Show, which we'll never be able to do because of, you know, their shameless stealing of clips and music and from the main ones. But by God, yeah, there must be something to watch.
Oh, it's, you know, if anyone is listening and has not taken a nosedive into Turkish or Southeast Asian cinema, it is a lifetime and a world of appreciation and discovery. There's always another one. I've been really into Turkish films probably since the early 2000s. There was a movie called 3Dev Adam that I was first introduced to, which is, the American version is Turkish Captain America and Santo versus Spider-Man. And it's a movie about exactly what it sounds like, but Spider-Man is this murderous villain who's interested in stealing gold statues and murdering people. So Captain America and Santo are dispatched to stop him. And it's, man, they add a lot to the mythos of all of those characters in that movie. But yeah, you know, Sword in the Claw is one of this, you know, rich tapestry of Turkish ripoff movies, but it is the rare Turkish movie that's kind of its own thing too. It's got its own story, even though it takes elements from other movies. But Cüneyt Arkın, as you mentioned, he's basically like the Sylvester Stallone of Turkey. He's made hundreds of movies, still working to this day, and you know, it's instantly recognizable. He was literally the Turkish Rambo in Turkish First Blood, and you know, tons and tons of other movies. And Sword in the Claw, like I said, is one of the original Turkish productions, so it is a little bit different than the others, but it's got the same level of just absolute like madness in the red, you know, just rage going through the entire thing. Just really, yeah, it's really kind of hard to explain, but it's basically the story about this guy who is raised by lions and, you know, he
as they are,
yeah, he's raised by lions, has these incredible metal tiger claws that are kind of similar to like Freddy Krueger gloves, and kind of goes on this, you know, revenge filled rampage to stop the oppressors of his country. And it's, yeah, it's like a really wild fairy tale mixed with like Dolomite and the Three Stooges and all sorts of different things. But just, you know, like brilliant. Bat Pussy, one of a kind experience.
Yep. Let's have a brief clip from The Sword and the Claw.
You must kill the pig. His father killed your father. Don't have any mercy.
You're doing well, my boy. Give me a sword.
No, my son must finish off the job without weapons.
Well, that gave you a little taster of the TCU, Turkish Cinematic Universe, a world unto itself. So let me ask you a question now in terms of looking to the future. Obviously, we're emerging from the pandemic. Cinemas are coming back, and you've had this major pivot and, you know, discovered, you know, the art of staying alive and, you know, I have to say thriving. You know, some of the things you've been doing are seriously impressive. And same with us. I don't think we would have launched the Cold Pig streaming service if it hadn't been for the pandemic and sort of forcing to reevaluate things. But I wanted to ask you what your thoughts are moving forward. What's going to be different? Deep Sea Cinema is becoming more adventurous in terms of programming. Are we going to just go back to the blockbusters, or is there more of an opening for niche films, special kind of curated festivals? And I'm kind of putting a leading question here, but I'm hoping you're still going to give us some great insights.
Oh, yeah, I think it's a great question. I think it's something that's on a lot of people's minds. And I think with the theme of what we've been talking about is curation is key. And I really feel personally from what I would be looking for and from what I can tell on, you know, social media and what people are talking about, I think that there's going to be a push initially to get people back into theaters with hits that they know and love. And obviously you need to do that. But I think that people are really going to respond to highly curated programming that's very personal. And I personally feel like I want to go, if I'm going to get up all the effort to go to a theater, I want to get something that I'm not going to get elsewhere, which means I want like a very passionate intro from a host. I want maybe some movies that I'm not going to be able to just go on Amazon Prime or Netflix and see. So I think that that's going to be the key to like rebuilding audiences. I think there's going to be, more of a revolution with indie theaters and more nonprofits. And because I think that's where you're going to go to get the really, really interesting stuff. So that's kind of where, you know, we see it going. But of course it's hard to tell, you know, and that's kind of what our gut says, but, you know, we'll see as things play out.
And speaking of curation, if, you were to pick out a film for, a curation in the coming month, give us something else from your great collection.
Let's see. I would probably go with one last title would be Lady Street Fighter. Because of Renee Harmon. Renee Harmon is the reason. Renee Harmon is a woman who tirelessly, you know, fought her own battles and worked her ass off to get her film made on her own terms, completely independently. And I think her work has always been derided. You know, I think people always look at it and make fun of it because it is so strange and otherworldly, you know, and it's usually, you know, people that approach films like that, they come from a point of not understanding, so they make fun of it. And it's basic bullying, you know, it's the way I see it.
Yeah.
So Renee Harmon, to me, is one of the most unique filmmakers working in 70s and 80s exploitation because everything was to her own beat. You know, every way that she produced films, the way that she told stories, the way that she acted was following only her wavelength. And it was like, if you couldn't get on her wavelength, then you have to get off of it. You know, she didn't care. So Lady Street Fighter to me is one of her magnum opuses. It was a movie that was really important to her. And James Bryan, of course, is a director and her longtime partner working on these films. And he directed Don't Go in the Woods. But Lady Street Fighter was like her major, like, okay, this is the one, you know, this is the movie. And I don't really know what the movie's about, but she's a special agent. You know, she's like a cop and she's just got to get revenge. So I've seen the movie so many times, but it's hard to even like summarize what it's about. But it is very much like traveling to a different planet where someone has picked up a camera for the first time and has decided to make a movie without any prior knowledge, even though she'd been working for years at that point. But the one cool thing to remember about her movies is that she got them made by having students in her acting classes pay to be in them. So they would actually pay for part of the movie to be made. So she taught acting classes for many years at a junior college in LA. And she would be like, I'm making a new movie. Who wants to be in it? And they would all raise their hands and then they would have to pay a certain amount to be in the movie. And then that would help finance the movie. So it kind of answers a lot and very little when you watch the movies, when you know that fact.
Now let's have a clip from Lady Street Fighter.
Who sent you?
The manager.
You lie. Who sent you?
Lem.
Lem?
Well, we're rapidly coming to the end of what's been a fascinating glimpse. I mean, this is just a tiny little peek into the wondrous creation that is AGFA and the amazing collection and output and really contribution to cinema culture and appreciation of films. So we will definitely have to have you back on this, but I just wanted to ask if, first of all, any final comments or from Smut Peddler?
Yeah, I actually have a surprise question for you, Joe. You're also a musician.
Oh, yes.
And I have the pleasure of owning three of your albums, which is pretty cool. And one is actually a soundtrack for a movie. And I think that, you know, to end this show, maybe you could choose a song from one of your albums and we can play that as our outro show. What do you think about that?
Oh, thank you. That's very kind of you. On top of all the other kind things and support that you've done today, that's super nice of you. Thank you. Sure, I'd be happy to.
So tell us a little bit. You have a duo?
Yeah. So Annie Choi, who is my partner at Bleeding Skull and in life, we have a band called Taken by Savages. It's been going since about 2012. And we've released two full lengths and a couple of EPs. And we'd also did the soundtrack for Jungle Trap, which is a movie that you can get on Blu-ray now from AGFA and Bleeding Skull. And also a Renee Harmon and James Bryan movie, the last one that they had made. And the story of Jungle Trap is that it was basically an unfinished film from 1990. So we completed editing the film with James Bryan and then it needed a soundtrack. So we recorded a soundtrack for it. And we did that in 2016 and now it's out on Blu-ray in 2021, which is cool. So did you want a song from that or a song from the pro? That's like the, you know, we did a soundtrack. It's very different than the actual proper band.
This is just your choice.
Okay.
You know, you decide, just go for a favorite.
Okay,
favorite of yours.
I'll go for a favorite. I'll go for something from our first Taken by Savages album, which is called Taken by Savages, and a song called Hawaiian Thigh, which is one of the first songs that Annie and I wrote together. So I always have a soft spot in my heart for that song. I really like it. I think it's a good representation of what we do as a band.
That's really beautiful. Any last words from you, Django Noodle?
Nope. I've got to rush off now and watch all the films that I haven't seen on the list here because, you know, this fires me up. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us. Joe Ziemba from the amazing AGFA.
Oh, thank you both so much. It was a pleasure to be here and I can't wait to do it again.